Greetings and welcome back to The Dive, our weekly deep dive into a topic in our Daf Yomi study. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom. This particular shiur will follow a different format than our usual dive because half of the shiur in a separate recording was devoted to a special tefillah composed for the captives who, Be'ezrat Hashem, will be redeemed soon and liberated from their captivity in Gaza. But in the meantime, the half of the shiur, would be approximately 30 minutes, is devoted to a topic towards the end of the third parak of Kiddushin, which is a topic we're calling matrilineal descent. Just to clarify, this was a topic that was something of a hot-button issue about 30, 40 years ago in American rabbinic circles, or American synagogue circles, shall we say, or community circles, because there was a heterodox movement that announced that a child who either parent of which was Jewish, who then if the child announced publicly in synagogue that he or she identified as a Jew would be considered a Jew, thus creating the misnomer, because that's not really what it meant, but patrilineal descent. But I mean, the notion being that if even father was Jewish and mother was not Jewish, that the child would then be considered Jewish. And so that resulted in being a lot of discussions about why it is the case that we have matrilineal descent. And that led to a further question, which is actually a serious question, not just on the political front, but on a halachic front, which is why is it that religion is determined by the mother, such goes the thinking, and tribal identity goes by the father, which, of course, is the case. If you have a Kohen who marries a Bat Yisrael, the child is a Kohen. And a Yisrael who marries a Bat Kohen, the child is a Yisrael. So that the identity of the child follows the father, and yet, for religious identity, follows the mother. And that led to some confusion and lots of, shall we say, errant approaches because they didn't understand the fundamental issues at play, which this shiur will be devoted to. So it'll be a different type of shiur, not focused nearly as much on the methodology of a shaklavatarya and reading skills in the Gemara as much as the conceptual issues at play. But as you can see, we have four passages in Torah that we need to look at first. We're actually only going to look at the first one to begin with, and then I'll reference back to the other ones during the shiur. In the end of Parshat Vayetchanan, in Dvarim Zayin, the Torah prohibits us from making any covenants with the seven nations of the land. We're supposed to go to war against them, destroy them, etc. Do not make any covenant with them. And the highlighted Pasuk Gimel, V'lo titchatein bam, you may not marry with them. In other words, don't intermarry with them, which at first blush seems to be a prohibition against intermarriage with the seven nations. And that's it. And then the continuation of the Pasuk is Bitcha lo titein livno, don't give your daughter to his son. Now, who's his son? The member of the seven nations, carry the Kanani, who you're making a brit with, and your son, your daughter is going to his son. Uvitolo tikach livnecha, and do not take his daughter for your son. In other words, there's two scenarios that are being envisioned here and both being prohibited, which is intermarriage in which the girl leaves, and we'll talk about that in a minute, to go live with her non-Jew, with her Kanani husband, or intermarriage in which a Kanani girl comes and joins the family as a marrying your son, the Israeli. Now, the reason I mention that is because in the ancient world, throughout the period of Tanakh and through part of the rabbinic period at least, the norm was that when a person got married, the move was to the husband's estate and family. And the reasons for that are really kind of agronomic, and they have to do with land and with farming, etc. But this not being an anthropology class, we're not going to go into detail, but the fact is that that's the way it worked, is that a girl moved to the husband's estate, and in some cases may never have seen her family again. Think about Rivka leaving Haran to come to Be'er Sheva. Think about many other cases of that sort, where the girl leaves and moves in with her husband's family. So as a result of that, bitcha lo titein livno, notice the language, do not give your daughter to his son, meaning giving her away, uvitolo tikach livnacha, do not take his daughter to your son, meaning bringing her in. which means that if in this scenario, and that, by the way, is the reason that, the simple reason that if a man from Menashe marries a girl from Zvulun, they continue to live with Menashe, which of course then explains why the children are identified as Menashe, because they're going to be inheriting land of Menashe, and that way tribal solidarity and continuity with the land is maintained, which of course is the thrust of the last parsha in Bamidbar, the parsha of Bnei Yosef and the issue of Bnei Tzlofchad. And so therefore, in the scenario envisioned here, you either have a girl leaving home to marry a Canaanite guy, terrible, or a Canaanite girl coming in to marry a Jewish guy, also terrible. Now, what's the next pasuk is the phrase that's going to enlighten us further. Ki asir et bincha me'acharai. He will turn your son away from me. That's the reason given, and it has to do with avodah zarah, meaning he. Now, who's the he here? He is, at this point, the father of your daughter's husband, meaning your daughter is Jewish, marries this Canaanite guy, and who's the person you're not allowed to make a brit with is his father. And so that father will turn your son. Now, who's your son here? Your son is not a player here. It's your daughter. Because what happened is, since your daughter left and moved in with him, therefore they are under the aegis and under the influence of the Canaanite father, grandfather as it were, and he will take your son, meaning the child born of that union, and turn him away from me. All right? Which means, and that's the scenario that's envisioned here. So the scenario here is very limited. It's limited to the seven nations, and it's limited to a case in which a Jewish girl is given in marriage to a Canaanite, Chivi, Prizi, whoever, family, and she marries a man from that, and the concern is that his father, or we could read it more broadly, even he, the actual father, the guy she married, will turn your son away from me. All right, keep that in mind, because see who's called a son here. By the way, it's not a son, it's your grandson. So we'll talk about that also. Let's go straight to the sugya. Remember that in our Mishnah, the definition at the end of the Mishnah, the last clause of the Mishnah was, if you have, remember the Mishnah is made up of four parts, if you have Kiddushin with somebody and it's totally legal and legit and proper, then the identity follows the father. If you have Kiddushin with somebody where there's a violation involved, but the Kiddushin are valid, then it follows the weak part of it, or the blemish, if you will. If you have Kiddushin with somebody with whom you have a child with somebody with whom you cannot have Kiddushin, but they can have Kiddushin with somebody else, meaning arayot, then the child is a mamzer. And the last one is, if you have a child with somebody who has no Kiddushin with anybody, dahinu, a non-Jew, then, or shifchar non-Jew, then the Vlad follows her. All right? So now, the Yerushalmi immediately gives reasons and says as follows, Shifcha wai dichtiv haisha viladea tiyel adoneha. And that takes us directly to source three. And that's the case of an Eved Ivri, who the master gives a Shifcha Kenani to. And the text says, Im Adonai v'ten lo isha, the highlighted Pasuk Dalet in source three, Im Adonai v'ten lo isha v'yalada lo vanim ovanot, she births for him, meaning, for him could be for her, the man, the Eved Ivri, could be for her master, but the Eved Ivri is the source of that fatherhood, children, sons or daughters. Ha'isha viladeha, the woman and her kids, tiyal adonai, they belong to the master, and the Eved goes free. Now, the Eved Ivri, that's the one thing that Eved Ivri has as a permission that no other Jew has, which is to have relations with the Shifcha Kananit under these conditions, and under other conditions which we studied about earlier in the first parak. The point is that the children are called Ha'isha V'yiladeha, the woman and her children. And take a look at source 4, the Mechilta, on that spot, says, Ma Talmud Lomar, why does it say it that way? Magid She'yiladeha Kemoha, teaching that her children take on her identity. And then the Midrash goes on, Ein li ela shifcha she'yiladeha Kemoha, Menachim Nayin, how do I know to apply this to a regular non-Jewish woman? And then Rabbi Shmuel says, "Kal v'chomer mashiv chakranit she'en la kiddushin mikol adam vladea kemoha." So he says a kal v'chomer, but it's really not. It's more of a binyanav, which is a shiv chakranit has no kiddushin at all, and the children have her identity. Af kol shein la kiddushin mikol adam v'ladea kamoha. So therefore, a non-Jewish woman who doesn't have kiddushin, her children are her identity. Hezazer zevlad shivcha nochrit. All right, that's a nochrit. Okay, fine. Now, we have to kind of dig underneath and see what is the sort of the meta thinking on this. But if you take a look at source 7, which is our sugya, you will see that the sugya starts with a different proof for shivcha, which we're not going to dwell on, which is the comparison of the kanim to the chamorim, famous the drasha on the pasuk about the akedah. And then the Gemara immediately quotes the same pasuk that the Yerushalmi quoted about Haisha v'yiladeha, proving that the children of shivcha are hers. Now, nochrit menalan, start from that line. Nochrit menalan amar kra lo titchatein bam, our pasuk that we started with. Now, the way we understand that pasuk is there is no legitimate kiddushin between you and the seven nations. And how do we know that the child takes her identity? And this is where we want to get to that issue of the son. And remember, this is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. That's critical. He will mislead or direct your son away from me. Now, who's your son? Bincha habam Yisraelit kari bincha. Because remember the scenario. Your daughter left to go live with the Kanani, and he, either the father or her father-in-law, her husband or her father-in-law, as it were, will mislead your child. Why is it called your child? Because the mother is Jewish. But ve'ein bincha habam Yisraelit kari bincha elabina. Now, why would he be misled? Because he's living in their estate, under their domain. But if the non-Jewish woman is brought in, and she's living in your estate, that's not our concern at all, because that child's not yours. In other words, we're using the description of what we're concerned will happen to also define lineage. Okay, so Amar Ravina. Ravina then points out, Shmamina ben bitcha bamina nochri kari bincha. So you see that when you have a grandchild, even if it's a grandchild in which it's your daughter's son and the husband or the father of that child is not Jewish, it's still called your grandson. And then the Gemara goes on to a tangent about that. But in the next paragraph, and I'm doing this for consideration of time, Hahu b'shiva goyim k'tiv. Remember, that whole parsha is talking about the seven nations. Sha'ar umot minalan. How do I know that it applies to all nations? Amar Kra, the answer is ki asir pincha, because that pasuk that we looked at is he will mislead your child lirabot kol hamisirim, meaning extending it to anybody who would mislead your child away from Hashem, which means any pagan, any non-Jew. Doesn't matter if they're from the Shiva Amina or they're talking about celebrating Christmas. Either way, they're misleading and taking your child away from you, away from me, says Hashem. Now, the problem is, remember, as I said, this whole drasha starts with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is known for having an approach, we see that throughout Shas, of Doresh Tam HaMikra, meaning he looks into the halakha, he either says there's an explicit reason given for the halakha or an implicit reason that we can figure out, and based on that reason is actually willing to adjust the halachic parameters of it. The most famous example, of course, is the almana, the end of Bar Metziah. The Torah prohibits taking a pledge from an almanah when you loan her money. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, if she's a rich almanah, you may do it. And why is that? Because he says the reason the Torah prohibited taking a pledge from an almanah is because an almanah is typically poor. And what's the halakha of taking a pledge from a poor man? You have to return it to him every evening. And therefore, here's a widow. And now you, the man, are coming to her house every evening, returning a pledge. That's going to destroy her reputation. And therefore, the Torah prohibited it. So if she's rich and you don't have to return it every evening, it's mutar. That's from Shimon's Doresh Tam Dekra. So the same thing here. He's saying the reason for the prohibition of intermarriage is because of Avodah Zarah, which means then it's not limited to the seven nations. It's anybody. The only problem is, if you are Rabbanan who disagree with that approach, then how do you find a ruling that identifies the matrilineal descent among other nations, meaning a Jew marrying a non-Jewish woman, having a child with a non-Jewish woman, and among other nations? So the Amar Kra v'achaken tavoi leha v'alta. That takes us to the text that we skip, which is text number 5. This is the story of the Yifat Tor. And the case of the Yifat Tor is a woman who is found in war. She's not Jewish. She is not from the Seven Nations, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to marry her and keep her alive. And there's a whole procedure done. And at the end of that procedure, as you can see in the highlighted Pasuk Yod Gimel, V'acharken tavoy leho v'alta. After you've done this whole procedure, which involves ultimately some form of conversion, then you can have relations with her. Right? And so there, that's what we give the answer. Markrav v'acharken tavoy leho v'alta, chad mikar l'tafsi ba'kiddushin. And like you've done with every step in the sugya, all that teaches us is that kiddushin do not take effect, are not valid in the case of this relationship. Vladakim otamanalan, how do we know that the child takes on her identity? So the answer is in the other passage that we skipped, which is passage two. Passage two, which actually follows immediately after Yifat Torah in Kiteitse, is the story about a man, the case where a man has two wives. One is more preferred than the other, and they both have children, but the eldest is born to the one who's not preferred, and he has to give the Bechorah to him. And it starts as follows. Ki tiyana le'ish shtei nashim, hachat uva v'chat snua. Tiyana, which literally means to have or to be, but the way we read it halachically is valid kedushin, like v'yatsa v'hayta le'ish acher, as we've seen throughout Yitzian Havaya. Ki tiyana le'ish shtei nashim, which means a man is legitimately married to two women, chat uva v'chat snua, v'yaldu lo vanim, and they birth for him sons. That's the scenario set up. And so the Gemara does the following with that phrase, kol hecha de karinan be kitiyana karinan be vialdulo. Anywhere that we can apply the phrase kitiyana, meaning valid kiddushin, then we apply vialdulo, that they are his. Kol hecha de lo karinan be kitiyana lo karinan be vialdulo. But anywhere where we do not see valid kiddushin, then we do not apply vialdulo. And the simple calculus at the end of this whole process is, any relationship where kiddushin are valid, even if it's a prohibited relationship, like a kohen to a grusha or a Yisrael to a mamzeret, as an example, the kiddushin are valid, and in that case, it's considered to be the husband, the father's child also, and then the identity will depend on the circumstances, but the identity is part, he is part of that identity calculation. But where there are no kiddushin possible, doesn't mean there were kiddushin. If a man and a Jewish man who's single and a Jewish girl who's single and they don't have kiddushin and they get together and they have a child and they're not in other ways prohibited to each other, besides the fact that they're not married to each other, then that child, he is considered the father because kiddushin are possible there. But wherever kiddushin are impossible, for instance, with a non-Jew, then by definition, it does not follow him. He's not a player. He's a donor, and he's gone, basically. That's the way we read it. So the Gemara ends with, our passage ends with, Ihachi Shifcha Nami. So if that's the case, why did we need the whole proof about Shifcha? Basically, that line, Ki Tiyana Le'ish V'Yaldulo, should be the end of the road, should be proof enough for all cases. Wherever Kiddushin can't happen, the child takes on the identity of the mother. And the answer is, you're right, and we come up with a different explanation for what that pasuk, Aisha v'Yiladeha, is coming to prove. I want to show you this run and kind of use this run as a this run and a Ramban as kind of a jumping off point for a kind of a meta-analysis of the issue, which, again, we don't normally do, but I think in the case of this particular issue, it's in place. The Ran, in his commentary on the Rif, a very short piece, as you can see, it's three words, on the piece that we just read, Karina be Vialdulo says, Shemit Yaches Achar Aviv. In other words, Vialdulo, meaning she bears to him, means that the child is associated with, is related to that father. In other words, the one who is the male partner in the birthing, shall we say, and the donor, if you want to call it, actually is considered to be now the child of that man, right? The Ramban, also in his Chidushim on our sugya, has the following comment. He says, "Bincha karui bincha ve'in bincha ba min haklanit karui bincha ela benat." That is the earlier passage in the Gemara, but the same topic of saying that the child born to your daughter, who is Jewish, and the father is not Jewish, the father of the child is not Jewish, is considered your son, but not the flip. And he explains as follows, and you see I highlighted part of it. Perush midelo katav rachmana ki tasir. because it doesn't say she will lead him away. It says he will lead him away, meaning it's the non-Jewish father who will lead away the child of your daughter who is Jewish. The Torah is not concerning itself with a child that your son fathers with a Canaanite girl. Because if this child born of the Canaanite girl and your son were considered Jewish, then we would have a greater reason to be concerned about keeping this child in the fold. Why? Shu nigrar achar maasei imo. I mean, this is a line we're going to come back to. The child naturally inclines after his mother's actions. Umedabek bidracheha, and he follows her behavior. Shehi megadla to mikat nutoka. She raises him since he's a little kid. In other words, the underlying thinking here is that a child is naturally more attached to his mother. Parentheses here, but a vital one, and something that we saw back in the toward the latter half of the first parak, is the Torah, when commanding us regarding our parents, commands us two commands. One is honor, respect, and the other one is fear. When it comes to respect, kabed et avicha et imecha, it's father than mother. When it comes to fear, it's more ish imo v'aviv tirau. A man should fear his mother and his father. And the Gemara, which Rashi quotes in his commentary on Chumash, says the following, that the Torah understands psychologically that a child is naturally more in awe or fear of his father. His father's one who disciplines him, etc. And therefore, it put fear of mother first. And a child is naturally closer to his mother and feels more love towards his mother because she takes care of him and she nurtures him, etc. Therefore, it put love and respect, etc., of father first. Right? In other words, to counter your natural tendencies. But that notion that a child is closer to his mother is something that we all instinctively understand and feel, and we get it. And so that will help us sort of develop this larger issue. Parenthetically, there's a very interesting story of the Yerushalmi that I put in here. We don't have time to take a look at it, but I strongly recommend if you have a chance to look at it. If you need to, go to Yerushalmi.alhatorah.org, and you could see a translation of the story there also, and you could see where it is. Yivamot Perek Bet Halacha Vav, it's again enjoyable in its own way. But I'd like to now discuss for a moment the broader issue at play here with matrilineal descent. And as you can see, starting from this Ramban that we just mentioned, that matrilineal descent, if you think about it, is the most natural thing in the world. It makes the most sense. Is for instance, we know who a child's mother is because child came out of that woman. We don't necessarily know who the father is. Today, with DNA, paternity test, etc., we can identify it with near surety. But a mother, we always know 100%. And that's why the Gemara in Chulin in the first parak asked the question, how do we ever find a child culpable for something they did to their quote-unquote father? How do we know it's his father? We're going to actually execute somebody based on cursing or striking his father? How do we know? And that's how we know that we follow Rov, etc. But the point is that matrilineal descent is the most natural thing in the world. It makes most sense that who a child is depends on who his mother is. That's kind of the default position. We have the Torah institutes a chidush, an innovation. It's not an innovation in human history because it did exist before the Torah, but it's an innovation systemically. And that innovation is kiddushin. That innovation is the protection, and I'm using this word deliberately, the protection, the protective bubble of kiddushin that guarantees, in its idyllic fashion, and hopefully in most cases, that guarantees a reliability, a consistency of relationship, that there'll be father, there'll be mother, there'll be a home, there'll be a monogamy, etc. And even where polygamy exists, where that's maintained in a way that still maintains this, and of course, now that's not something that we, not for the last 1,000 years of practice, at least in Ashkenazi countries, and not since pretty much the 19th century anywhere, 20th century anywhere. But in any case, that is a chidush. That is an innovation. And part of what happens there is there's a new idea that comes up called family. Family, if you think about it, is a radical concept. It means here you have an individual who came from one place, one gender. You have another individual, the other gender, coming from another place, another clan, another family, and they come together and they suddenly take on a new identity called a family. And that identity has all sorts of impacts. It has impacts for arayot. Suddenly you married a woman, her sister is off limits. You married a woman, her other kin is off limits, etc., and vice versa. But more critically, for Yerusha, for identity, for what tribe you're part of, etc., even in our own practice, what minhagim you adopt, which kind of people become important in your life. Suddenly, there's a whole new family that's important in your life, which is your wife, so it's her parents and her siblings, suddenly are part of your circle. It's a radical concept, which we take for granted because it's part of our lives, but it's not to be assumed. And part of what that innovative concept does is it suddenly creates an identity chain between the father and the child. And so that the child now takes on the identity of this family is a family of Kohanim because the father's a Kohen. And therefore the child is a Kohen. And the girl may have come from somewhere else. She then subsumes that identity. Now, you could have a whole other discussion about why should they assume his identity and not her identity, and that may go back to what I said earlier on about assuming the husband/father's tribal association. It may be based in agronomics, it may be based in other things, but it is what it is. And so therefore, we step back and say, patrilineal descent is an accurate statement to describe in a world of kiddushin, meaning only when you have proper kiddushin, meaning even though they may be prohibited, but proper valid kiddushin, and certainly when there is proper kiddushin, do you now have this concept of association of a child with the father? Take that away, and we're just at ground zero, at the basic level, not ground zero, the basic level, which is matrilineal descent. It's the most natural thing in the world. And so therefore, if you have a Jewish man and fathers a child with a non-Jewish woman, there's no mishpacha, there's no kiddushin there. There's no nothing there, and therefore the child is not Jewish. It's basically part of the continuation of the mother. And vice versa, the child is Jewish because the non-Jewish father in the story just isn't a player there. And so that's a different way of looking at it, but I believe that that's what emerges from both the sugyot and the comments of the Rishonim, cryptic though they may be, I believe lead us to that understanding of the sugya of matrilineal versus patrilineal descent, as it were, and hopefully gives us a new eye into this. And you could see on the source sheet, you see source number 9 is the Rambam, which summarizes basically our Mishnah and the particular points of our Mishnah. And again, the story of the Yerushalmi at the bottom is an interesting piece. The last thing to mention is that the last two pages of this source sheet are of a different topic, which are of the text of the tefillah that we composed for the current crisis of our over 200 hostages that are being held by Hamas, Yimach Shmam Zichram. I'm saying about Hamas, of course. So what we have is on page 4 is the text of the, on the right side of the tefillah we composed, and on the left side, the text of the tefillah as it appears in some of the Sidurim that was being used till now. And on the second page, the text of the tefillah we composed with a translation into English. So hopefully we can all find this of helpful and useful during the period. And again, there's a separate shiur I gave to go through it, which is available on the same podcast channel. And we should all have yeshuot v'nechamot, and we should see an end to Memshalat Zadon, to the evildoers and the brutal enemies of Israel, and enemies really of all humanity. And Imir Tzashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should bring true shalom le'artzeinu, le'ameinu, and really l'chol ha'olam.